Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast, everybody. It's your boy Steve here, and we got another banger on our hands, folks. This one's all about Macacao and Memo Fantasma. Buried within the many stories that exist about Pablo Escobar, there exist two men that took what he started and ran with it in the worst way possible. Carlos Macacao Jimenez and Guillermo Geraldo, a.k.a. Memo Fantasma, a.k.a. Will the Ghost, were some of the highest-ranking officials in the right-wing paramilitary organization known as the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, AUC for short. Imagine the worst stories you've heard about crimes committed by any cartel anywhere, and the AUC has done it or something worse. They terrorized Colombia for nearly a decade, fighting both the left-wing guerrillas and anyone who they considered remotely connected to them. And in their wake, there rose the largest and most successful drug trafficking empire in the world. The AUC is the best example of what a narco state looks like, and sitting at the top are Macacao and Memo Fantasma. So, yeah, folks, it's going to be a good one. We got another two-parter. Our guest today, this one was done by my guy, Gray Livingston, our producer. He did a lot of the research. Shout out to our guy, Gray. Our guest this week is Nicole Amy Schreiber. She's an L.A. comic. She's got a bunch of credits, Comedy Central, True TV. She's also one of my very good friends. How does our relationship work? Well, we were both passed at the Comedy Store at the same time. What does that mean? Every time people get passed at the Comedy Store, there's a class, right? It's normally one guy who either worked there, a girl, maybe one other, two other people. And it happens about once to twice a year. So we were passed together. We were friends before that. But, you know, when you do something with someone like that, you tend to build a friendship. And that's what we have. She's one of my favorite comics, one of my favorite people. Love hanging out with her. And you guys are going to like this episode. You know, it's not exactly what we did last time with the Vario Hawaiian Gardens gang. But this one's got a lot more jokes, and it's pretty funny, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Oh, what have I been up to, man? Well, Thanksgiving was this week. That was fun. I had probably the weirdest Thanksgiving I've ever had. Me and my buddy Morgan Mazzell of the Big Humble Podcast. He'll be a guest on here sometime. Him and Matt Lockwood. Matt Lockwood was on the Biker Gangs podcast episode. Me and Morgan, we got really stoned, watched football, and then got Popeyes. That was Thanksgiving. And listen, I could have gone to my family's house. I live probably an hour away from all my extended family. But, you know, that's a lot to do. It really is. I've never had kind of a do-nothing Thanksgiving. And so I was like, fuck it, let's do it this year. How'd it go? Pretty good, man. Just didn't do anything. I'm going to tell you, though, I thought, being in L.A., you know, I thought more places would be open. Let's just say that. I wasn't prepared for every restaurant in the city to shut down. I thought, you know, some places be open. It's L.A. There's foreign people that maybe don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Bought a lot of people out here by themselves. No, the city was goddamn dead. Dead as a fucking doornail. So we looked about everything we could get. Came to Popeyes. Ate. You know, I haven't had Popeyes in a long time. I would say Popeyes is the best fried chicken. I'm willing to say that. I do not think KFC holds a candle. I do not. Church's is a goddamn nightmare. Bojangles, pretty good. Raising Cane's, pretty good. You know, but those guys, they're specializing in chicken tenders, which really is a completely different thing, you know. Like, fried chicken is for, like, a man, you know, like a family. Chicken tenders are for a special ed kid that you sit in the corner and give him some mayonnaise to dip it in. It's not grown man shit. But I was thinking about, you know, because I was talking to someone. Sad thing was, I tell you what, you get stoned and you Popeyes for Thanksgiving, there is no leftovers. So that was kind of a bummer. But I was trying to think. So I told someone that I did that. And they're like, oh, what a sad Thanksgiving. I didn't think it was sad whatsoever. I got to hang out with my buddy Morgan, hang out with my girlfriend. Jordan got called off for the first time ever. Normally, if you're a nurse, just like another, you know, occupations that are not really all occupations, but the hospital just didn't have a bunch of people in there on Thanksgiving, and they got her off, so she was able to hang, and we had a great time. But then when I said it to people, they're like, oh, that sounds like a sad Thanksgiving. I'm going to say not a sad Thanksgiving. It was fun. I will, though, I was trying to remember what, like, my worst Thanksgiving was. Like, end all be all. And I would have to say, I remember. I remember one year. Right? We're all, you know, you get the, I feel like every year there's a couple people that start the phone thread of, hey, what are we doing for Thanksgiving? You know, normally it's like the guy or the person who's kind of running the family holidays, you know. It's normally not like everyone does that. There's normally one person. Well, this one year I had one of my aunts took the lead. Would have said, shouldn't have took the lead. But, you know, it's a family thing. You're not just going to jump on someone. God, I got fucking cat hair on my mustache. You're not just going to jump on someone who's saying, hey, I'll take the lead this year. So everyone was like, okay. Group text, everybody in the group text, hey, we're going to my house this year. It's like, okay, strong little decision there, but we went with it. Then we go to her house, right? It's like a day before thing. I feel like my family does this a lot. Kind of like a day before planning for the holiday to commence the next day. You know, like you're giving out dishes, okay? So I get there. All my family was in the group text. Not many people showed, okay? Not many people showed. About three of us. Me, my Uncle Bob, and my aunt. Now, to say that these are the three best family members at my family to be throwing a Thanksgiving dinner, not a good idea. If my family was a group of Laffy Taffys, me, Bob, and my aunt, I'm not going to say her name, would be banana flavored, left at the bottom of the bag. Maybe someone likes them. Probably the same kid that was eating tenders, okay? I feel like the the Venn diagram of special ed kids eating chicken tenders for meals and enjoying banana Laffy Taffys are the same thing, okay? So we get there. My aunt, vegetarian almost her whole life. We walk inside. She pops up. Hey, I'm going to do meat this year. Interesting choice, okay? I would have said of anyone in the world I could have chosen to do meat, maybe she'd be the last. She wasn't even that great at vegetables, and that's all she eats. Then I go, okay, Thanksgiving, you know? Just go with it. It's not a time to start getting mad at people or be like, hey, I'm the meat guy. What the fuck are you doing? You're not even in this game. You don't just jump in and start picking teams for kickball when you don't got legs. I don't know if that makes sense, but it kind of feels like it does. So I go, okay, you know, whatever. I'll take it. You decide it's going to be at your house. You decide you're going to do meat. Fine. I go, I'll throw it up to you. Little volleyball. You spike it back at me. I go, what vegetable do you want? What do you want me to bring? I'm normally a meat guy, but I can do anything, okay? I'm a five-tool player, okay? You know what I'm saying, guys? Five-tool player. She throws out squash. Now, I could have named 100 vegetables, never would have even came up with squash. I don't know if I've ever seen a squash. I don't know where you get squashes. Do I got to find a guy? Is this a thing where I can make a phone call, be like, hey, buddy, I heard you selling blow again. You got a squash guy? How do you cook a squash? So I boiled it. Wasn't the best way. My Uncle Bob sees what's going on with me. He goes, hey, I'm going to take a jump step in here. He goes, hey, you don't suggest anything. I'm going to bring my girlfriend. She is going to bring a family recipe tradition thing for her. I go, okay, that's fine. I'm just still shell-shocked I'm on squash. And honestly, shell-shocked that she chose meats. But I go, okay, whatever. I go home, start boiling squash. I don't know. If you've never seen a squash, it looks like a pumpkin's dick. Doesn't look edible. Shocking that people even have eaten this thing. It just is insane. So I boil the squash, go to their house the next day, I walk in with boiled squash like some sort of fucking barista at Irwan. That's like a Whole Foods for rich people. So I get in there. First thing I notice, Chinese woman holding chow mein. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm going to let you guys on a secret. I'm not Chinese. Also, don't have very many Chinese family members. And if I'm going to be completely honest, don't think I got one. So I thought it was just me, Bob, and my aunt. Turns out there's Chinese woman holding chow mein. Put it together in my head. It's Bob's new girlfriend, who's Chinese. Her Thanksgiving tradition, chow mein. I go, okay. So far, the three people bringing dinner for Thanksgiving have come with chow mein and squash. A 1-2 punch only that could only be beaten by the fists of a gay man at a pool party. Limp. Not strong. Not doing much damage. But I go, hey, you know, whatever. I'll get some turkey. Nothing wrong with turkey. I'll eat turkey. I'll eat squash. Turkey and chow mein, fine. It's almost like chicken chow mein. My aunt, very excited, goes, I brought out. And she goes into the, like Leave It to Beaver's mother. You know, like the 50s. She's got an apron on. She's smiling. Hair done. Goes into the oven. Pulls out a meatloaf. I'm like, okay, you know, weird start with the meatloaf. Maybe that's like a side to the turkey or the ham. No, she only cooked meatloaf. I'm like, who has ever eaten meatloaf for Thanksgiving? She's shocked. She's like, everybody eats meatloaf for Thanksgiving. I was like, if we gave the Native Americans meatloaf for Thanksgiving, they would have said, hey, thanks for the smallpox. You can keep the meatloaf. Meatloaf. It's like, hey, you love bread and meat? Well, how about meat in the shape of bread with ketchup on top? Disgusting. So for dinner, for Thanksgiving, one year, I had meatloaf, chow mein, and squash. I don't think anyone's ever said the sentence, I ate meatloaf, chow mein, and squash. I don't think anyone ever would say the sentence. It was like a Mad Libs of like, what are three meals no human should eat at Thanksgiving? So when people say, was the Popeyes bad when you're hanging out with one of your best buds? No, folks. Also, I want to put this out there about Popeyes. Their mashed potatoes, far better than KFC's. You know, fast food mashed potatoes, hard to do. Also, the red beans and rice, fucking slap. So that was my little Thanksgiving dance. How's my weight loss been going? About 220 still. Went back up from the 217 was nice, but you know, then you got the holidays, man. What am I supposed to do? Not eat on the holidays? I mean, should I have eaten Popeyes? I don't know. I mean, you should have deep fried a turkey instead. Same goddamn thing, folks. Let's not play games with our hearts here. So I'm just kind of, honestly, I've been too scared to check. But I don't feel too overweight. And I can normally feel it. I feel pretty good right now. What else happened? Oh, I got Taco Bell. Got bad Taco Bell. Okay. There's my girlfriend loves Taco Bell. Because if you get Taco Bell on the Postmates app, you can customize it in a way that I have never seen anything customized. You can go into it and literally add 10 different sauces, vegetables, different meats, different beans. So my girlfriend, who's vegetarian, likes to go there. She get a black bean taco with a bunch of onions, whatever the fuck else she eats. So we go. But the one thing I like, I'm a chalupa guy, okay? I've always been a chalupa guy. Before chalupa guy, I was a gordita guy. I was like, how can they possibly make a shell better than a gordita? And then they deep fried it, and I lost my goddamn mind. So, okay, what's your Taco Bell? Let's think for ourselves, okay? What's your Taco Bell order? Me? My Taco Bell order, for a fact, is going to be two chalupas, one seasoned beef, one steak. I would go chicken, but the chicken, you ever get chicken at Subway? There's, like, no grill marks, but someone took, like, a brown Sharpie and crisscrossed it. The consistency of fast food chicken is that of... of circus peanuts. You know those weird orange peanuts? It's like someone salted them, cut them up. It's disgusting. I can't do it. Steak, a little more. Still not really steak consistency. Not sure what I'm really eating here, but it's better. So I go two of those. No cheese. I know. I get it, folks. I get it. Why is he not eating cheese? Because, you know, there's a couple vices. I consider cheese a vice that I don't do. Coffee and cheese. And honestly, I've done some research. It saves me thousands of calories. It just does. So I go two chalupas. Normally probably a grilled stuffed burrito, though they got rid of that. So if I go on the app, you can just get like a really cheap bean and rice burrito or a beef and rice burrito. add some beans, add some other stuff, comes up with an extra 70 cents. It's a game changer. So I'll normally about two of those, two chalupas. Now, everyone knows the best thing about a chalupa is that crispy crisp, right? The crispy crisp that everyone wants, everyone needs in their life. It's the consistency, different textures you eat, you know? Because I love that in food. I don't want to eat gruel. I'm not a gruel guy. There's a lot of people love gruel. I've never been a gruel guy. I like textures, consistencies, flavors. I don't know if consistencies work in it, but I think it kind of makes sense. This place, these sons of bitches that talk about my house, it's hard to say, folks. It's one of the hardest things I've ever even had to say out loud. They don't fry the chalupa. You heard it right, folks. They don't fry. They thaw it. They thaw it and then put it in there. I mean, rude, shocking, unbelievable. I'm going to tell you this right here, folks. Getting Taco Bell and then them not crisping up the tube, the lupa, not crisping the lupa, is like you hit on a girl all night. It's not even a girl. You hit on somebody all night. You're buying them drinks. You're out of pocket right now. But the chemistry's there. You know what's coming. You can feel it building right throughout the night. Sexual tension's happening. They're grabbing your leg. You're touching their arm. It's popping. Then you go on the old bathroom or the old backseat of your car, and you try to slip it in. You get whiskey dick. That is an uncrisped lupa. Taco Bell whiskey dick my mouth. And I did what anyone does with a whiskey dick. Just put it in your mouth, see if it can get hard. See if I can suck it crispy. No, I still ate them, but it was disgusting. So that was a bummer on that one. How have my spots been around town? The Setup LA spot in Culver City has been fantastic, as always. It actually has a better one this week. We're starting to pack them in, man. It's getting a little cold, but we got these little heaters out. It's going good. It's going good. My spot's at the store. You know, I was a little worried this week. Not going to lie to you, folks. Put in my avails, only got one spot in the OR in the middle of the night. I was like, oh, I thought it was main room guy. It's all Stevie main rooms. I thought I got at least one main room a week. Turns out they made not a mistake. They just wasn't their best stuff. And so then they threw me another spot when someone didn't show up or canceled. So I had two spots this week, both in the OR. Original room is the original room of the Comedy Store. It's about a 180-seat room, low ceilings, all black. It's a great room. The problem is, man, there's some people towards the end of the night, I call them walkers, white walkers. They're not necessarily white. What they do is they walk the audience because they aren't very good at stand-up comedy. I'm not going to say who. But I was having to follow a couple walkers. And that sucks, you know, especially when you go up in the main room. There's no real walkers up there. There's no white walkers out there walking the audience. And my spots at the store have been getting so good that I was starting to go above the walkers. But then this week I went below. Now, that sucks. I don't know if it's a me problem. I don't know if the booker just wasn't looking right. I'm going to tell you honest, I did put both days that I got booked, I wrote late next week because I had shows earlier than that. So that's when I talked to her, that's what she said it was. She said, we didn't say how late. Normally I start putting 10 p.m. because going up after about 11:15, you go up after some guys that just, listen, some people might like them. They probably like themselves. I like them as human beings. I would even like them maybe in a different setting. But after 2 hours of comedy of some of the best people in the world, when you come up there with less than stellar, doesn't go well. So I did the Wednesday set late at night. Man, I haven't done a late night set at the Comedy Store in a long time, man. So the thing about the late night spots at the Comedy Store is audience dwindling, tired, punch drunk. But a lot of times, a lot of the other, your peers will start coming in. Okay, especially, you know, people are seeing me tour with Bert. People are seeing me headline C and B clubs. People are like, oh, you know, guys are like, hey, I've known this guy a long time. See, the thing about L.A. comedy is you can hang out with your friends in L.A. and you can have never seen them do stand-up because there's just so many spots. So a lot of times late night, guys will come in and watch you. I did good, didn't do great. But a lot of people came to watch me. A lot of people liked it. Then the Friday one comes. Friday was fun, man. I had three spots. I had one at the Hollywood Improv, did really good. Then I did this one at the Yard Theater. Oh, shit. I did one at the Yard Theater. That was fun with my guy, J.F. Harris. He's the guy who did Evil Corp. And then I ended it at 11 o'clock at the Comedy Store, and that was so fun. I knew there was something I needed to talk about. This episode is dedicated to my friend Matt Billen. He passed away on Thanksgiving. Well, at least we were told. How do I know Matt? Matt was a real deal 90s, 2000s headliner in Canada. Decent name, sold some tickets, comes to L.A., and wasn't getting the heat he wanted, and he got a job at the Comedy Store. Matt was fairly older than me, probably 40. I was probably 29, 30 at the time. Me, Matt, and Hormos became best friends. Hung out all the time, took acid in the desert, and he was a great guy. You know, they say Canadians are nice, and I haven't met one that wasn't. You know, it either can be someone maybe smiling in your face, stabbing you in the back. I haven't seen that, but... You know, fine. I'd rather someone smile in my face, stab me in the back, than stab me in the front, than stand me in the back. Like, at least lube it up if you're going to fuck me. Matt was a great guy. Hung out with him all the time. Spent many weird late nights with him. So he might have had some drug problems, okay? And I think that's why he came to L.A. to escape Canada. Comes to L.A., and I think he gets back into the same stuff. You know, we partied a few times together. And then once I get past, he goes home to Canada. I wouldn't say, he's 40. And the guy who's, what did I get past it, 30, 29? 29, I think, 30? He's probably like, fuck, you know? Comedy is a thing like sports, you know? You got friends on your sports teams from your best friends. But we all want to be starters. Now, if I can't be a starter, I'd rather one of my best friends start. But, you know, if you're 40 and this is the last year, you know, you're a redshirt senior at college and you're not starting, you're probably going to bail. So Matt went back to Canada, and then I hadn't seen him for a long time. Hormos was keeping up with him. And apparently he went to Mexico, and that's where he passed away. I don't know what it is. I seem to know a lot of people who die. Is it my fault? I don't know. Who are you, a cop? What are you asking me? No, obviously it's not a fault. But I've just known so many people who died. Friends. Family. And this one hurt, but I haven't cried yet. I don't know why. Because he definitely was... one of my best friends, man, for 2-3 years of my life. I went on a lightweight bender, too. That's kind of why when I was talking about those shows I did on Friday. When I heard, I ate a shit ton of edibles just so I could go to sleep. I went to bed at like 9:30 on Thanksgiving. And then... Friday when I went out, I tied it on pretty tight. I normally like to kind of go on a little bender action when something bad happens for a couple days. And then I wake up at the end of the bender and it's been, you know, my benders too. It's not like a real bender. I'm not like living in the streets. I just get pretty fucked up for a couple days. And that way when the couple days are over, I come out of it and the thing's like 4 or 5 days past. I kind of did this one, but it's just waiting for it to hit me. Oh, my nose fucking itches. Goddamn cat. Just waiting for it to hit me. It's going to hit me, but it's just a bummer, man. He was a great guy. I think he had a serious drug problem. Wish I could have said hello one more time, said hi to him. One more desert trip. I remember one time we all go out. Me, Hormos, and him are so excited to go to the desert. Right, we're going to Joshua Tree. I don't even know if I'd ever been before at that time. So we're like, okay, we'll get some mushrooms. We'll go up there, get some food. Sleep the night, come on back. So we're bringing up 110. On our way up there, all of a sudden Matt's like, hey, I need to get my brakes changed. It's like, okay. So then we spend like 2 hours of him getting his brake changed. I don't know. Maybe even an oil change. Then we get to Joshua Tree. All of us are so excited. We all house our mushrooms before we even found our camping spot. Then we proceed to have quite a difficult time finding where this camping spot is. Not easy. Once we get there, too messed up to put up the tent. We're laughing. We're giggling. We, you know, if you're on mushrooms, you don't really get that hungry. We wait. We're like, okay, we'll wait till a little bit later, man. See how it goes then. At the end of the night, it's pitch dark. We can't put out this fucking tent. So we got a fire. And then I fell asleep on a rock. Hormos, I think, fell asleep in the tent as it wasn't up, just like as a blanket. One of the coldest nights of my life, but one of the funnest nights of my life. And, you know, to have friends like that that you can brave the elements with, and it's a funny thing. You know, you do that with someone that you're not that close with and they are angry or whatever the fuck. Some people find excuses to ruin their days. But we had such a good time that I remember this trip fondly. And in essence, it was me sleeping on a rock. A large rock, flat rock. Kind of my back was bent a little bit. Matt, I love you. I miss you, man. I wish I could have seen you one more time. I wish you could have conquered some of your demons. So this episode is dedicated to Matt Billen. And I wish I could dedicate more to you, buddy. I love you. So, what's up? Up next, me and going back on tour with Bert. We're going to Texas. We're doing Austin, Sugarland, Grand Prairie, and New Orleans. It's my first time ever going to New Orleans. Very excited. Hopefully, I just pound as much seafood as humanly possible. Also coming up, I'm doing that Netflix is a joke radio thing. Doing that on Tuesday. A little nervous. Not nervous on it's. I'm only doing 7 minutes, but I just don't know what material to do. Apparently, my buddy Brian Simpson talked to him. He said he was making a decent amount of money. You get a check from the internet every once in a while when you do stuff like that. And he said he was getting a decent check. So I'm like, what material should I do? Should I do smaller jokes so that it's more of them and I can get maybe paid more? Should I do clean jokes or should I do dirty jokes? Right now, I'm leaning on dirty small jokes, but I don't know if the dirty ones get played as much. So I got about 2 days to worry about that. Cool thing is when you deal with someone like Netflix, when you have to get a COVID test, they just send the people to your house. So, like, I don't got to do shit. I'm just getting everyone sent to my house. And then that's about it, guys. Kind of put me in a weird mood when I remember the Matt thing. Have I been trying to push it out of my brain? Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know what I'm supposed to do about that. But everybody, oh, let's get to some suggestions. I got some good ones this week. Number one, watch Dope Sick on Hulu. Excellent. It's all about how Purdue Pharma really fucked up everybody and got everybody addicted to drugs, to heroin, essentially. And if you want to watch also get some more information on that, check out Crime of the Century on HBO. I would watch Crime of the Century first, at least the first episode of that. And then move on to Dope Sick because it'll answer a lot of your questions. Funny thing this week, I'm just like watching Dope Sick, and whenever my girlfriend has a question, I go, she can answer, ask me, and I answer, and she goes, how do you know all this random stuff? It's like, because Jordan, all that you watch is 90 Day Fiancé and Teen Mom. When people go, these shows rot people's brains, they don't mean literally rot people's brains, but it just means you will learn and gain nothing from this show. Whereas I try and watch shit, documentaries about crimes, documentaries about anything, just anything. And then you learn shit. You retain information. Unless you want to know what the, marital laws are in Bosnia. I don't think 90 Day and these other places are going to help you. So I would suggest watching Dope Sick first and that. Also, check out the Kid Cudi doc on Amazon Prime. I am a huge Kid Cudi fan. He's kind of been the guy throughout my, you know, maturation as a human and as an adult. He's probably a couple years older than me, but he's the first guy to ever do kind of like sad rap, thinking about stuff other than just pussy, drugs, money, and strippers. Check out that one. All right, everybody. This is part one of the Macacao and Memo Fantasma podcast with Nicole Amy Schumer. We're going to release the next one next week. I love you guys. Stay safe. Don't die in Mexico. I love you, Matt Billen. Check out the podcast, everybody. Macacao and Memo. What's up, Nicole? Thanks for coming in, buddy.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to look at the homework you did.
Yeah, we're pretty much going to grade a 10-page paper that my producers and I put together.
Oh, so it wasn't you?
They helped me with it. They give me a lot of the information, and okay. I kind of put it together and write the jokes and put it in the right area.
I was just imagining you at home doing research like a college kid, and I was like, did you even go to college?
I graduated college, 2.8.
Wow, that high.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even expect that high.
Honestly, I had a 2.8 from third grade to college, cheated every.
Who did you cheat off of?
So, different ways, okay? Number one, by the time I got into high school, phones were around.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do is I would get the prompt of what's going to be on the test. Mm-hmm. I would do it all. Then I'd put the phone between my legs, mm-hmm. and I'd sit on it. And then when a teacher comes by, you close your legs. When they're not by, you open them. Wow. And you just look down like that. So the reason I always got a 2.8 is because I did the work.
Because your thighs were too thin?
No, it was just...
They caught you with the phone?
I couldn't close your thighs? I was an excellent cheater. Yeah. But yeah, I just never that smart, so even cheating, I still only got like
I think it's
2.8.
So funny when there are people who have like a pride and they were like such a good cheater in school.
I just couldn't do anything else. I would have not made it.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're not a dumb guy.
I just can't study. I cannot study. I cannot do it.
Why?
I cannot do it.
Can you write jokes? Can you sit and work on your set?
It's hard. I don't really do that. I normally have something written down. I normally come up with a joke randomly, like a muse blesses me.
A muse blesses you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then right before I go on stage, I got like six things that'll say, you know, like, fat girls eating Slim Fast or something, you know, whatever it is. And then I'll go on that and I'll go on stage and just say it a bunch of times until something hopefully comes.
And then at no point do you like write it out and fine tune it?
Not often.
Okay. So maybe you would have been bad at school. Yeah. Your studying's not your thing.
Truly.
Because I'm figuring like, oh, you don't have passion for it. You're not dedicated to it. But I know you're passionate and dedicated to comedy. But if you're not even doing that much due diligence in your comedy, then you wouldn't do it in school either. I loved school, so it's always weird to me when people are like, I hate studying. I'm like, how do you hate studying?
I also can't remember things, like, at all.
You can remember your set.
Kind of. I always have a set list. Always. I'll forget.
But you remember your jokes.
Yeah, but it takes a while, man, and I'll forget parts of them. I have I was on a shit ton of Adderall as a kid. I was on 50 milligram Concertas, which are all day.
SR. Were you super thin? That's all. Anytime someone's like, I was on so much Adderall, all I can think is how thin they were.
No, not really. I was still in sports and still like did stuff.
Okay.
I would probably just like carb load or something in the morning before I took it. Get two breakfast burritos and then at night get another burrito or something and just bulk up.
Just a real burrito guy.
It's always been burrito heavy.
Yeah, your burrito softball joke from...
See, I don't even remember what we're talking about. Burrito softball joke.
The burrito, I'm sorry, from Chipotle?
Oh, yeah, the Chipotle joke. Yeah, I love that one. That one's great.
Oh, my God. That's like one of your greatest jokes ever. You're like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Dude, that's what I'm telling you. It's really that bad. Like, the worst is like someone will say, you know, I've always liked that joke. And then I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But then you look it back up, and you're like, oh, this was a sneaky good one.
Yeah, that was a sneaky good one. And then you're like, shit, should I bring this back?
Yeah.
And then you have to shoehorn it somewhere into your set.
Ugh. I love going back and getting... I mean, I don't like going too back because somewhere... All right, this is going to take a long time.
Let's get into this.
This one is about Macaco and Memo Fantasma. Buried within the many stories that exist about Pablo Escobar, there exist two men that took what he started and ran with it in the worst way possible. Carlos Macacao Jimenez and Guillermo Geraldo, a.k.a. Memo Fantasma.
I mean, why he didn't go with Geraldo is beyond me, but go on.
Imagine if a man named Geraldo murdered your whole village.
Ugh.
Memo Fantasma was actually, its nickname, Will the Ghost. That's the name, what it is, translates to, which is pretty
sounds like
cool.
Sounds like the newest band at Austin City Limits.
Yeah, they're playing the Echoplex later tonight on a Thursday. Were some of the highest-ranking officials in the right-wing paramilitary organization known as the United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, UAC for short. Imagine the worst stories you've heard about crimes committed by any cartel anywhere, and the AUC has done it, or probably worse. They terrorized Colombia for nearly a decade, fighting both the left-wing guerrillas and anyone who they considered remotely connected to them. And I mean remotely. Like if one guy in a village was connected to them, they wiped out the whole village. And when they wipe them out, they don't just fucking shoot some guys in the head. They hang you. Then in front of everybody, they start quartering you.
Quartering you?
That is where you chop someone into quarters.
Why quarters?
You have
like,
to...
why get mathematical about it? Why be like, let's cut this guy into four pieces?
I think it's two arms, two legs. It's easy to just wrap them on and you have them.
I know,
like
but
that.
That's fiving a person.
Because there's a head left, right?
Well, there's the torso. You take off the arms and the legs.
No, you quarter it like this.
Oh, so you take a chunk of the torso.
Yeah, you're chunking. It's like a chicken wing.
Okay, so then, where's the head going?
I think they like put it on like a pike.
You're still getting fived. Mm-hmm. You're not getting quartered.
I know what they say about war criminals. Not the best at math.
I mean, I need more precision in my murder.
So they used this to then become one of the most successful drug trafficking organizations in the world. They had 30,000 paramilitary men with guns and tanks roaming Colombia and Bolivia. The UAC is the best example of what a narco state looks like, and sitting atop are Macacao and Memo Fantasma. So we're going to go a little backstory on how they even became, right? Like all good stories about cocaine, they start with our guy, Pablo Escobar. In 1976, Pablo Escobar founded the Medellin cartel after spending the last few years engaging in various criminal activities. The Medellin cartel distributed powder cocaine, and it was the first cartel to establish smuggling routes into the United States. This led to a demand for the drug exploding, and by the 80s, Escobar was shipping 70 to 80 tons into the U.S. every month.
Wow, that is a business.
He quickly became one of the wealthiest men in the world. But that came with its own set of consequences. Rival cartels in Colombia and abroad challenged him for dominance in the market, and by the mid-80s, Colombia was the murder capital of the world. Seems like a lot of his business partners and, you know, different cartels are going against them. Have you ever felt everyone was going against you? What was one time it was true?
I've actually never felt like everyone was against me, but I did feel like some people were against me. It was like probably middle school getting mm-hmm. picked on.
Was that rough in middle school? You and Jessica Michelle Zingo look like little boys.
Yeah, when we were kids, we looked like little boys. Absolutely. It was rough. Her and I both caught a pair of scissors to the hair and had too much hair taken off. I don't know who okayed our haircuts. I don't know what mom, and my mom was like okay with it. She was completely okay with the fact that I had boy short hair. She thought it was cute. She thought it was soigné is what she said, which is, I don't know if it's French, but it sounds French.
You look like a cute little boy, like a dorky cute little boy.
Yeah.
But you did not look like a girl whatsoever.
No, not at all. But I just felt like I was kind of just like this weird, loud kid in middle school and, you know, I was just picked on. I was, you know, I remember there were some girls who did some fucking mean ass shit. The school that I went to. So we had at lunch there would be a rag on the table and it would be one person's job to like clean up the table. Okay.
I remember that rag.
So I remember this one girl peed on the rag. Left, took it to the bathroom, peed on it, brought it back, and then was like, Nicole, you have to do the table today. And then I cleaned a table holding her pee rag.
That's pretty bad. Yeah, you know, how big a school did you go to in middle school?
It was a private school. So there were like maybe 100 kids in my grade.
Yeah, mine was pretty small too. I felt that there weren't any bullies, but sometimes I feel that way because maybe I was the bully. But I don't feel I have that. I never hit anybody or anything like that. But I definitely
you would
fun
do
of people.
Mental warfare. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
you
made
would
fun
be
of people.
You'd be a fucking dick with your words for sure. How would you have made fun of somebody though? Like, what would you have done? Would you have been like a catty, just a mean guy and made fun of like dumb shit? Or would you have been like, oh, your fucking mom's an alcoholic?
No, Jen. No. I've always had the thing. This has been since I was a kid. You never make fun of someone on something they can't change. So haircut, go. Jackets, go. Shoes, go. Because you can change that. But someone's nose, their appearance, their family, you don't make fun of that.
You can change a nose.
You can't change a nose. And so I will be going after people's noses.
Yeah, you should start going after people's noses. If you didn't get to do that in middle school, let me tell you right now, all the joy. You know, sometimes, though, people don't get a bad nose till high school. So you wouldn't have done it anyways in middle school if it would have. I don't know. When did noses come in?
I felt like my nose has always been kind of the same.
You have a really good nose, very straight. It's okay.
It's good.
If you would change anything about your nose, what would you change?
I feel like it kind of goes up like a pig.
Oh, not at all. Your nose doesn't even go up a little bit at all. I can't see into your nose. Look at me. No, not at all. I can see into it a little bit because you're tilting your head up.
Okay.
You're great. You're an attractive man.
You're doing great too, buddy.
Thanks. Let's keep all right, this going. Let's move it.
1991, Pablo Escobar surrendered to the Colombian authorities on the condition that he was not to be extradited to the United States. That's where the United States comes in, takes the guy, puts him in their prison. And when the United States gets you in our prisons, we don't fuck around. You're going to be there for a very long time.
Love it.
He was imprisoned on a host of charges, but struck a deal that allowed him to be housed in a luxurious prison that he built himself called La Cathedra, a.k.a. the Cathedral. The cathedral had, among other things, a soccer pitch, a bar, a jacuzzi, and a waterfall. This isn't a prison. Nicole, who, when, where has been the best house you've ever been in?
Wow. I've been in some pretty great houses. God, I don't know. Probably a house in the Hamptons. I've seen some pretty crazy houses in the Hamptons.
Yeah. Well, what's a cool thing you've seen in a house?
An indoor-outdoor pool. Like a pool that went
inside to outside.
And you could just swim under. And then it had this little thing that came down. So, like, during the winter, they could drain the outside area. I don't know how they did it, but it was amazing. And then it had a tennis court, a basketball court, and it was by the ocean.
Ooh, that's really cool.
I literally just, like, went with a friend over there. We were there for probably a total of, like, 10 minutes and then we left and I was like, we should be friends with this person.
Yeah, we'll never. Can I just clean your windows?
Whose dick do I have to suck to go back there? I'll probably have to find someone's dick to suck to find out whose dick I need to suck.
The best one I ever went to is my grandma got remarried to a guy named John Olson, I think his name was, and his family, he had one kid. He had one kid that was dumbass rich, like crazy rich, and he hired the guys who did the Pirates of the Caribbean to do his backyard, and like a cuckoo clock goes off every hour. This guy would have a fake pirate swing on a fucking line every hour, all day, and he goes, and he swings every hour on the hour. It's one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life. And
unreal. Yeah. Where was this?
It's in Orange County area, like the nicer area of Orange County.
That's wild.
It was really, and it looked exactly like the ride, like the, because the same guys, so like, kind of like the mannequin looking faces and the dark stuff and the ship, and there's a lot of fucking, it was really cool.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. While in prison, Pablo Escobar had placed much of his smuggling interests in the hands of his senior traffickers, Fernando Galeano and the Castano brothers, Fidel, Vicente, and Carlos. They were growing rich and powerful, and Escobar felt he was not getting his fair share of the proceeds, so he summoned three men to the cathedral to explain themselves. The Castanos refused to go, but Galeano went against the advice of his head of security. He was killed by Escobar in prison, and Escobar then sent his sicarios are hitmen, to wipe out the Galeano clan and secure all their assets and infrastructure. This sparked a civil war in Medellin cartel. Have you ever had a friend or loved one turn on you? When, where, and why, Nicole?
I've had someone cheat on me. Does that count?
Perfect. Tell me about it.
I was with a guy.
How long were you dating?
We were dating for about 2 years. Okay, and okay, so here's the story. We started dating, and he was in a 12-step program. He had just gotten sober. He was 6 months sober when we started dating. Shouldn't have dated him.
Probably not, yeah.
Bad idea. At one point, he was like, hey, can you do me a favor? I left my journal at your house. can you just read me something on the back page, the last page of the journal? And by the way, I would never read someone's journal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, but don't read my journal. And he had never said that before. I had no intention of ever reading his journal. But the fact that he was like, don't read my journal. I was like, well, no, I have to read your journal.
I don't like people telling me I can't do stuff.
So I read his journal and I found out basically that he was cheating on me in his journal.
What a moron. Imagine having something that can get you in trouble and you're asking someone to open it, but only look at the last page.
Wild.
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 It's probably a self-sabotage thing. I'm a huge self-sabotager.
Are you?
Huge self-sabotage.
What's the most self-sabotage-y thing you've done?
Oh, I have so
My self-sabotage comes in the form of laziness.
I was in love with this one girl in high school. Uh-huh. We were dating the whole time. She was 2 years older than me. She taught me how to drive. It was great. And she went away to University of Kansas. And we had kind of broken up. And she was coming back.
Uh-huh.
And was like, I think I just got out of high school. She was probably a senior in college or going to junior college. She was coming back to L.A. And we were like, let's meet. And I was very excited because I had very strong feelings for her. But I didn't know if we could go farther. And so she was coming back at 8 at night. My buddy's having a barbecue. Uh-huh. I go, okay, I'll go to the barbecue because I'm so excited. I mean, I've been counting down because at this time, I truly love this person.
Uh-huh.
I've been counting down. First person I ever had sex with. I was counting down the days.
So she taught you how to drive a car and drive and that dick.
Yeah. I learned how to do a lot in that little old Jetta. Losing your virginity in a Jetta is very hard to do.
Oh my gosh, that is so sweet.
So she's coming in and I'm so excited. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go to this barbecue, have a few beers, have a good time. Time will pass super fast. Bam, my turn to go pick her up. I go to the party. My buddy asked me to play beer pong.
Uh-oh.
That's the last thing I remember. I wake up the next morning at that party naked. Apparently, I had puked everywhere. She was left at the airport with no ride. Had to call her mom. We had even talked about how it'd been so long. We were like, when I pick you up, let's just bang in my car. So we're like, we're going to pull off on the sideway, bang in the car, have this epic great night. I forget her. I don't know why. I don't pick her up. Her mom has to pick her up. We never talk again.
She refused to talk to you?
She refused to.
Try to make it up to her in any way? And she just literally just iced you?
I mean, she had it right.
Now, do you consider that self-sabotage? By the way, if I take us off track, feel free to tell me to shut up. Do you consider that self-sabotage or do you consider it you have a drinking problem? And is having a drinking problem a form of self-sabotage?
I think that was self-sabotage. I just self-sabotage. I don't know why I did that. Because that hasn't happened before. I don't do it often. And I don't drink at home.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm here, I'll drink here.
So what's your vice?
My vice is everything, probably. But I don't do it, like, at home.
You're not vicing at home alone.
No, I go out and do shit. That's why I don't get addicted to things. Because I'm not doing it when I'm alone. I maybe do something once a week.
So the pandemic was the most sober time of your life.
Yeah, I think this pandemic lightweight saved me because right before it, I was having a great time and I was having too little.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that right before the pandemic, you were definitely having too much of a good time.
Yeah, it was great. But I'm happier now. All right. Prior to Galliano's assassination, the Castellanos were building a paramilitary army to fight against leftist guerrillas that had murdered their father and were fighting for the rights of the poor in Colombia to protect them from the government violence and to provide social justice through communism. Bunch of words in there you never want your paramilitary to use, like they're helping the poor in communism because they're never doing either. Suddenly, they had a new enemy in the Medellin cartel, and they sought funding from rival cartels to set up a vigilante group called the Pepes, a.k.a. Los Pepes, people persecuted by Pablo Escobar. Los Pepes carried out a bloody vengeance.
Just for the record, whoever did the research here did not close that parenthesis.
Yeah, I know. It's been bothering me, too. I just forgot.
Oh, it's driving me fucking nuts.
Los Pepes carried out a bloody vengeance campaign against Escobar supporters. They murdered more than 300 of Escobar's associates, his lawyer, his relatives, while destroying a large amount of the Medellin cartel property in the park.
Damn, get it.
Yeah, so like, you know, these aren't like even cartel. These are like paramilitary. So like, they got crazy shit. 1992, a shipment of 6 to 8 tons of cocaine arrived in America, sent from the Galliano clan before the murder of their leader. It was received by a man only known as Memo Fantasma. And with the war that followed, the shipment was all but forgotten by the Gallianos, leaving Memo to sell it and pocket all the money.
Get it.
Using that money he made from selling the stolen cocaine along with the contacts he made in Mexico and the U.S., Memo was able to set up his own operation selling cocaine, all while remaining off the radar of the Colombian cartels. Memo was able to be overlooked by the government. Has there ever been a time that you felt overlooked?
My career. My fucking career. I'm sorry. My non-career. I felt overlooked in my non-career. I've literally, like, I've gotten some cool shit.
I know you feel bad all the time I get for yourself, but I feel, and I think about you a lot like this.
Do you?
Yeah. And I think you sometimes need to look back and say, would most comics be happy to be who you are? You're passed by the New York Comedy Cellar, and some people are passed there and they never get spots. When you go, you get spots. You're passed at the Comedy Store. You get, I mean, you got like 5 main rooms this week. Insane.
By the way, for the record, one of them was the Mint show that I hosted that I did not get through the store. I got through the Mint guy. Okay, the store didn't give me that. Second of all, I did not call in for the past almost 3 weeks.
I'm not against you getting this.
Okay, spots. I know, but like I feel like this usually we're doesn't happen. This barely ever happens.
You get like 3 or 4. But we're not in the same book. Anyways. We're not in the same, you know, I'm going against other white guys, you're going against other women on the lineups. You're getting spots. I don't compare myself to other people.
And what's so sad is like people are like, it's not a competition.
It's a little bit of a competition. It's like amongst friends, you know, like playing a game at a party with friends. It's like, I don't care. I'd rather my friends do it. It's only when the people that I don't respect get
perfectly said, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. So everything I've gotten in my career is because I've gotten it. I have gotten no help from the industry. I've gotten no help from a manager or an agent. Everything has just been on my own. And it's so weird to me that the industry doesn't fuck with me at all.
It is weird. But you're still, you got to think of two different, what's industry? Industry is these weird management companies, or is industry institutions and stand-up comedy that matter? And you're passed by the two biggest ever in the history of mankind.
Which makes me feel like a fraud. But anyways.
I mean, I guess that's more of a personal thing, because I would be pretty proud if I was you.
I'm proud. I am proud. It's not to say that I'm not proud. It's just frustrating because it's like, I know that longevity in this business comes from having career momentum to be able to do it for a long time. You've got to have the industry on your side and like giving you stuff to like give you momentum so you can get exposure to more people, because the more exposure you have to people, the more longevity you're going to have in this career.
I don't even know it's people, to be honest with you. I think it's other comics. And the more time you're with other comics, like, you know, I mean, obviously this person is far older than you, but you look at someone like Jessica Kirsten.
Yeah.
She didn't really have anything.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
Yeah.
And now I'd say she's getting pretty big.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was the industry ever fucking with her. It was probably she's at these huge comedy clubs. Other comics know she's funny. And then when these other comics get opportunity, they give it to their friends that are funny.
So it's basically someone giving you exposure. It's either other comics giving you exposure or industry giving you exposure. But either way, you need an audience. You need a crowd. You need a following. Like if you look up at someone like, dude, have you ever seen the crazy shit Eliza Schlesinger's fans do for her? They're obsessed with her. Her fans are the most loyal, loving people I've ever seen. It's crazy.
Have you opened for her once or something?
I've opened for her a few times. I've never seen fans like hers ever in my life. Of all the people I've opened for, never, ever, ever. No one has better fans.
I mean, I'm with Bert. I see a lot of crazy shit.
I can't even fathom what it would be like.
All the men take off their shirts and sit in the front row.
I love that Bert's fans are just such bitches for him. Like, they will get naked for him.
Dude, it's It's zealous would be how I describe it. All right, let's get back to this. 1993, Pablo Escobar was killed on a Medellin rooftop, all but destroying the Medellin cartel as it once was. 1994, the paramilitary group founded by the Castano brothers came to be known as the Peasant Self-Defense Force of Cordoba in Yoruba.
Who's just letting people name themselves?
I mean, if you live in a jungle...
The Peasant Self-Defense Forces? You're a peasant. How unthreatening is that? We're a peasant self-defense force.
Well, what it is there are evil people that really just care about selling cocaine, and they're like, we're going to hide behind that we're trying to make things communist and help peasants, which they're not. And there, it goes by the ACCU. I'm guessing in Spanish it translates, or Portuguese, or whatever it is. It translates to something else. December 1994, the ACCU sponsors a national summit to form an alliance of like-minded groups. This led to the groups consolidating into the right-wing army known as the United Self-Defense Force of Colombia, AUC for short.
Wait. Scroll up. United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, AUC. Who's acronyming these things?
I'm guessing it's in Spanish.
Yeah, that probably is it. I'm like, wow, they are probably high on too much cocaine. They don't know how to make acronyms.
Yeah, I know. God, just imagine groups of 30,000 dudes with AKs, probably on cocaine.
Loaded.
Roaming the countryside.
Loaded on coke.
Terrifying. 1996, Memo sets up a laboratory in the Uramal region and begins churning out cocaine. The ACCU soon expanded the Yarmo region, and since Memo acted without their blessing, he was summoned to meet the Castano brothers. At this meeting, Memo was faced with a choice that all rival drug dealers and traffickers would soon face. Either join the AUC or face the consequences for selling in their territory, a.k.a. he'd be murdered.
You'd be quartered.
Mm-hmm. He'd be quartered. He chose to join and was introduced to a powerful drug trafficker at the time named Carlos Mario Jimenez, a.k.a. Macaco. So this is a huge moment in Colombian history that changes everything when these two psychopaths meet up. Has there ever been a friend that from the moment y'all met, you knew you'd be homies for a long time?
Oh, sure. I mean, who? Literally everyone. I meet people and we're like friends for life. I'm really that girl. It's kind of sad. I make friends with everybody and then we're friends forever. But, you know,
give me one example of someone that you were like, I think I'm going to like this person for a long time.
My friend Alex, who's currently staying with me. I've known her since I was 11 years old.
That's good. You got a long time, a lot of long friends?
I don't end friendships.
Me too.
I'm not I've never had a friendship go badly. Well, I've had maybe three.
Yeah.
But I'm a friend for life friend. And I love that. I might not be the friend who's going to show up for your birthday party, but I am going to be the friend who will go to the emergency room with you at 2 a.m.
Okay.
And that's the kind of friend I want
to
be.
That's a good one. Yeah, it means more. There's more
yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
The guy who sends up your birthday party might just be doing it to meet other friends you got.
Yeah, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Also, stop celebrating birthdays. We're fucking adults.
Yeah, sometimes I like to have a party. If it's a party, yeah.
Okay, but if you had a birthday, if you had a birthday party, would you get upset if people didn't come?
I mean, if no one came, yeah.
Yeah.
But if like, you know, if I got 10 people there, I'm good. I don't need
to. Yeah.
Detailing the rise of Pablo Escobar and the influence he's had on the drug trade would take enough time that it should beget its own episode. But it is impossible to tell the tale of Carlos Jimenez and Memo without first knowing what brought them together. Escobar's exploits, as one can imagine, were enough to demand the attention of the world leaders faced with a new explosion of cocaine. After enough pressure from other countries, the Colombian government was forced to crack down on Escobar, and in 1991, they structured a deal that would appease those that wanted him incarcerated while still allowing him to remain in the country. The jail, also known as Hotel Escobar, because of its luxury, was enough to keep Pablo just far enough from the inner workings of his cartel to make him suspicious. Suspicion led to murder, and after killing one of the four men that had been left in charge, the Medellin Civil War broke out. This coincided with another political conflict in Colombia at the time, known simply as the Colombian Conflict. The state government, the left-wing Marxist guerrillas, and the right-wing paramilitary groups were all engaged in armed warfare, and it was this precursor combined with the tumultuous power vacuum of Pablo Escobar that birthed the first iteration of the AUC, the paramilitary group that would soon terrorize nearly half the country.
I gotta be honest. This is a lot to remember. I feel like I would learn better if I were on cocaine right now.
We wouldn't be. We'd be having a lot more conversation.
You need cocaine to get through the history of Pablo Escobar.
I mean, it's going to get pretty popped. These guys pop it off pretty quick here. We're just going through the little back area.
Okay.
So, damn, a paramilitary group that terrorizes the region and makes you either join them or be killed. Sounds like a shitty decision. What's one decision you made in your life that you're proud of?
One decision that I'm proud of. I in college, I applied to an internship program at the Whitney Museum in New York, and they get like 2,000 applicants a year, probably more. And they only pick 20 people, and I got picked.
Nice.
I don't know if it was necessarily a decision I made. I mean, I decided to apply, but that was pretty cool. I was like pretty proud of myself that I got that internship.
Yeah.
And then I did nothing with my art history. I was an art history major, and I was pre-med, and I've done nothing with either one of them.
You know, I mean, I was in communications, and it's like.
But you're communicating.
True. I actually took. It was like. I don't even remember the word. What's the thing when you
maybe
like a critic
so good at
what is a critic
debate?
Thing? No, whatever. I did public speaking and criticism. That was it.
Yeah.
Which I was like, what could be a stand-up comedy degree? I was like, criticism with public
speaking. Did you always want to be a stand-up comic?
Yes.
Since that's it.
A child. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I'd be mowing the lawns and I'd be thinking of jokes for if anyone ever said something mean to me. I would have it. I'd be like, if Ted says this, I got this in my head and it's going to crush. All right, what happens if Tina says something? Oh, she'll probably say this. Okay, I can have that. And I'll just do that over and over and over as I move on.
So it was a means of survival for you.
Yeah. You know, and you know, that same girl that I fucked it up with, we were driving one day. And her friend, Sarah and Kara, I was in the back seat. We're all, you know, we're just having a good time. And we're all talking about what we're going to do in our lives. And then they go, what do you want to do? And I'm a sophomore, and I go, I don't know. They're like, well, what do you like to do? And I was like, I just like making people laugh, because I would always get kicked out of class for putting jokes. And they go, well, why don't you be a comedian? And then I was like, oh, interesting. And then from that day forth, I always had a running joke, a list of jokes in my phone that I was writing.
What was the first joke you wrote?
Oh, I have no idea. But I got my ex-girl, I would like get my phones from one of my ex-girlfriends or something. She'd give it to me, and so our notes would be linked up. And she would always look at the jokes I was writing, and she was like just laughing at them. All right, so those guys, the paramilitary people, are doing the shit. Enter Memo and Carlos Jimenez. The former was a man who found himself in the right place at the right time and ended up jettisoning himself to the highest heights of the drug trade at just 24 years old. Memo's 24. At the whole time you're reading this, you remember how this man is a fucking child.
24 years old.
Yeah, and... this is like, and he's going to go probably at 32, he's going to peak by just murdering.
By the way, 24 was the last year of cocaine for me. Once I turned 25, I stopped doing cocaine.
I didn't start doing cocaine until I came here.
Really?
To LA, yeah. Cocaine wasn't big where I'm from. I mean, now I do it like once a month, but yeah, I haven't done it since here. I mean, a little bit less since everyone.
It's truly the greatest drug ever.
Oh, I think the opposite. It's my least favorite.
Oh, what's your favorite?
I love opiates.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I used Which to sell one?
I love Percocets, Norcos, stuff like that.
Why?
I have a very hard time sleeping. I have horrific nightmares every night. I wake up screaming. I can't sleep for more than 15 minutes. I go back and forth. And just the way that an opiate puts you to sleep is one of the greatest fucking things on this.
So you don't necessarily like to get fucked up on a drug. You like to take an opiate and go bed.
Yeah. That the 1 second when right before you're nodding off. Also, sex on opiates is incredible.
What? It is?
Yeah, because the guy can just go forever because he's it still feels really good, but for some reason he's just not going to come, so he just fucks for hours, and the girl can just keep going too, and it's just great stuff.
But is that enjoyable for you?
Yeah, because I'm kind of quick, man. I'm like 10 minutes. I'm done.
Really?
Yeah. I could go longer. If I want to, or if I'm trying to prove something, you know, like first time, yeah, I'm going to go longer. I'm going to do a bunch of stuff. But like in the current relationship, you know.
What is your thing? Okay. You're after your first night with a girl. What is the thing she is going to say about you?
I'm going to eat pussy till she comes first.
Okay.
Number one. And then I'm going to fuck until she comes again, and then I'll come. So I do a 2-to-1 ratio.
So the review, the walkaway review for you is, he ate my pussy till I came. That's your number one. That's the number one thing she's
going to
say.
I'm getting it done early.
Okay. Okay.
So there's no stakes, you know? Because as long as you came, I feel like as long as you came once and I came once, truly that's even. But in my mind, really, I'd rather rack it up 2-to-1.
Okay. All right, let's continue.
It's the same thing of me being in when I'm mowing the lawn as a kid. I don't want someone to say something bad about me. So, or like to be able to. Okay.
It's a codependence.
Yeah. Most that met him knew him as Memo, which translates to Will the Ghost, but the true name he went by was Sebastian Colmenares, Colmenares. The drug factory that he established was soon in a territory controlled by the AUC, and when given the choice between paying for his mistakes or being part of the paramilitary franchise, he chose to join. Carlos Jimenez, a.k.a. Macacao, was an accomplice of the Castano brothers and serving as a leader in the AUC. In 1997, he and Memo were introduced to each other, and they would soon become partners in the AUC's quest to control Colombia. The years that followed produced what are perhaps the most brutal examples of narco-criminal activities the world has ever seen. So we go through some points, then we go deep. Memo Fantasma means Will the Ghost, and Macacao means Old World Monkey. Pretty dope nicknames, kind of. What are some nicknames you've ever gotten? How do you get them?
Oh my God, I've gotten so many nicknames. Okay, so one of my first nicknames was the Ajax Lady. This was at summer camp because I used to wear a bandana all the time, and everybody thought I always looked like the Ajax Lady. Okay, so that was one. My mom's first nickname for me was Bunny. She still calls me Bunny because I used to lay in my crib and like I would be like, I just made noises that sounded like a bunny. And then I also had no hair for like, I think I was like maybe 20 months before I had hair. So I just always had this like thin film of like velvety fuzz on my head. And my mom was like always like, you're like the Velveteen Rabbit. Anyway, so she called me Bunny. Bunny, Ajax Lady. Oh, my mom at one point was like, you little son of a bitch, I'm going to beat you till you're bleeding. That was another nickname. Really loved that one. And then my favorite nickname was Gibbler. As in
like
Kimmy,
Kelly, Kimmy Gibbler?
As in Kimmy Gibbler from Full House.
I can see
that. So everybody thought I were... So there,
that's pretty good.
There are people at my summer camp who only know me as Gibbler. Like, I ran into someone from summer camp, like, I don't know, it was like 2007. We're at the airport, and I was like, so-and-so, I can't remember what her name was. And she's like, yeah. I was like, Nicole Schreiber, summer camp. And she was like, I was like, Gibbler? And she's like, oh my God. She's like, by the way, I had no idea what your real name was. None.
Well, at summer camp, it's such a spike, you know? It's like you build these huge relationships so quick and all this kind of stuff. And, you know,
and then they're ripped away from you, and you have to go back to your regular school where you're not as cool or popular and everything sucks and everyone's mean to you and you want to kill yourself and you just hold on to that hope that you're going to make it till the summer so you can go back to summer camp where you can get fingered by Brad Roberts.
I got my first BJ at summer camp, too.
Oh, my God. I learned everything at summer camp.
Was Jewish summer camp?
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a Christian one.
It's not as fun as a Jewish one. I guarantee it. Guarantee it.
I've always had an affinity. But that first girl was Jewish. The girl I lost my virginity to taught me how to drive.
That's what first Jewish girls do. That's we take your virginities. We teach you to drive.
It's mothering. I don't know why my mother would take your virginity.
By the way, I love that she taught you to drive and you couldn't even drive to the airport to pick her up, you son of a bitch.
I still feel bad to this day.
Good, you should.
And that was probably 13 years ago.
So young.
I'm 32. The timeline, the right and left hand of cocaine. Before getting into the details of the crimes committed by the AUC and the BCB, it's important to know the time frame they operated in. 1994 to 1996. Under the command of Fidel Castano, not Fidel Castro, the paramilitary army that he had created in the wake of Escobar's murder systematically traveled throughout the cocoa-producing regions of Colombia, forcing the drug traffickers there to join forces or pay for the rights to continue for what they were doing or die. During this recruitment period, they slowly grew their forces until they had over 30,000 armed soldiers across the country.
Can we put that into perspective really quick? How many armed soldiers do we have?
We probably have way more than that, probably hundreds of thousands. But this is in a small country of Colombia where these are like dirt for, like when, like, cocaine producers in Colombia, they're like little families.
Yeah.
They're like just guys. They're not even doing it. It's just some tiny little...
little operation.
Yeah, little operation that they go, and then they come into town and sell at a farmer's market, and the guy buys the shit from him. So these guys are just taking these people over with guns. I mean, it is insane. 30,000 people? That's a fucking real deal army. And you can understand why the government can't really do shit. I mean, 3,000 is a lot of people.
That's insane. 30,000, by the way. I went to University of Michigan. There were 40,000 students.
You went to
the
University
there.
Of Michigan?
Yeah. Why?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
There were 40,000 people there, undergrad. 40,000 people. And this had, there was an, like, the entire, basically, city of Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Was a paramilitary group.
Was a paramilitary
group. Roaming a jungle.
Crazy.
A roaming group of 30,000 paramilitary soldiers wandering around your country, that's terrible. Was there ever a time in your life that you felt you were wandering or lost in life? And how did you change it?
I feel like I'm lost right now, currently. Something I'm experiencing since my dad died. I feel like I lost, like, kind of part of my identity.
Yeah, I could only imagine. I'm really holding out on my parents not dying.
Yeah, it's just like, you spend your life with someone, and then they're just gone. Like, it's just, it's such a hard thing to wrap my head around still that I'm just never going to see my dad again. And I know people are like, he'll visit you. First of all, he isn't visiting me in my dreams. He's a fucking lazy piece of shit when he's dead. it's infuriating. My dad
is a funny bit, maybe, or something like that.
Thanks. not a hair in sight from my dad. But it's just, yeah. Just, it's fucking depressing.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. I don't know how I'm going to do mentally about that. Because to be honest, I think a lot of times I go into these drugs and alcohols to, like, I don't like to think about things, mm-hmm. bad things. Kind of my whole thing is ever if something ever really bad happened, mm-hmm. I kind of go on a bender for about a week and a half. Because mm-hmm. kind of a week and a half is enough time for me to kind of not get over something, but just stop worrying about it.
Yeah.
So I think if I lose my dad or my mom...
You'll just go on a really big bender and work through it that way?
Or just do some weirdo shit where I'm just pushing it out of my head where I can't think about it. And then every time I think about it, it's going to fuck me up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to, instead of go around it or, like, you know, numb it or anything, I'm just, like, trying to go through it. But it really makes you kind of, like, rethink everything you've decided for yourself in life. You know, it's like, even with comedy, it's like, what the fuck am I doing?
Like, I mean, you're having a life. You have money in the bank. I'm guessing you're not stressing about that. I would just guess, you know, the whole Jewish thing, you probably save some money up. And your dad passed away.
Oh, my God,
so
I love that you think that I'm that savvy
fiscal?
With money. Because
I don't know. I think you're pretty. I mean, your dad passed, probably left you something. Your mom was a doctor, too. They're going to leave. You're going to be fine there. You're just like a doctor would be physically bringing, helping people. You, as a comedian, are helping people. To be every night we go up, and we think we forget about this all the time. We help, you know, if we do the main, that's 400 people
yeah.
that we made happy. We made their lives better that night. So to say that what we do, you know, and it does sometimes when you get down on yourself, you're like, this is stupid. What the fuck am I doing? I'm an adult. Why am I gambling my life away? But we're succeeding at it. And you got to just sometimes realizing in a week, it's possible that you reach 1,000 people
yeah.
and make their lives better.
Possible, yeah.
So are we rich? No.
But we're rich in laughs. That we've given to other people.
I mean, it's better than a guy. It's better than digging a hole. I'm so blue collar. When growing up, I was digging holes for, like, when you're the low man on the totem pole at a construction site, you're digging holes.
I gotta be honest. I love manual labor.
Yeah, you said that, right? Your dad was a
blue collar guy. But there's just nothing more physically satisfying than coming home at the end of the day tired from a hard day's work.
Fucking
period.
Fact.
Nothing. There's nothing more satisfying.
It's like that first drink of beer or thing you eat when you get home and sit on your couch after you busted your ass is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you what's not fantastic. The rest of that day before you had that beer.
Oh, yeah. The back-breaking work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is a hard day's work. There really is something to it.
At the beginning of 1996, the group officially began their campaign of terror. They claimed that their intent was to fight for the Marxist rebels. Oh, to fight the Marxist rebels, sorry. But in reality, it was to take control of the cocaine trade. It was during this time that Memo and Macacao were introduced to each other, and the pair was tasked with taking the guerrilla strongholds and cocoa-growing regions of the region of Bolivia. December 1996, in a pronouncement circulated by the AUC, Castano revealed that his fighters planned to carry out a population census to distinguish between people who are dedicated to working honorably and those who will be detained and executed.
What a great census.
I know. You start off pretty early, and then it's going. The pronouncement also included a death list of 200 names of suspected guerrilla supporters. 1997, Castano tells reporters that his forces would kill candidates perceived as supporting guerrillas. Wow. Castano said that even if you just know or support these guerrillas in any way, they will kill you. Has there ever been a person that you dislike so much that even if people were friends with him, you kind of hated those people too?
No, not really. I don't really care that much about... I mean, there's people I dislike, but I wouldn't dislike other people because they like them. That just seems like a waste of time. Like, I'll just hate one person.
Yeah,
what about you?
There used to be groups of guys, and like, I think this one goes more to when I was a kid, you know? Like in high school or something, mm-hmm. There's a group of guys... We used to fight these. There's these little groups of people. I was never in a gang, but I was associated with one gang when I was selling drugs for them. And then we had groups of friends that we would go out and just like fight people.
I'm sorry, you were in a gang?
I wasn't in a gang. So when I was selling drugs, there was a group of guys. That's how I got the name Scuba Steve Fury, because we had nicknames, so the guys would call me Scuba. They were not an official. I kind of like, I was kind of like a moon around their earth, right? So like they were selling drugs, they were robbing people, doing all this kind of stuff. I would buy drugs from them on a front, so that means like I always owed them money. And then if anyone ever had problems with, or if I ever knew a rival drug dealer's where he lived, I could send them to that guy's house. They would rob that man, do whatever they gotta do. I don't know. And then I would get some of his stuff at a very low price.
Wow. I didn't know you had such a colorful past.
Oh, I used to run
Scuba Fury.
I used to run drugs over the border in from Mexico all the time.
I bet you could get away with fucking murder too. That with your face,
yeah.
No cops.
And I was
thin.
I would wear pink polo, 7 jeans, and flip flops, and I would walk across the border with thousands of Norcos and
were you nervous?
Oh, dude, I got so many stories. I almost got caught once. It was one of the scariest moments of my life.
I'm assuming your parents know about all this.
I mean, they do if they listen now. I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, you know, if you're, I am who I am. This stuff happened a long time ago. I don't give a shit if they care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me. It happened. You're either going to not like me for something I did a long time ago, or you're going to.
Yeah. I've stopped caring what my mom thinks.
I
mean, if she listens to a podcast, she might have an issue, but she's not listening to shit.
It's also like if your dog's running around biting people. And you raised it from a puppy. It might be your fault that it started biting people.
Exactly. You sell drugs because you had bad parents.
I mean, my parents were great. But, yeah, that's not true. My parents
were
fine.
You sell drugs because your parents are fine.
Yeah.
Hasn't your dad been married 3 times?
Yeah, but only one of them was bad.
Just the one in the middle.
The one in the middle. The newest one's fantastic. My mom's cool. Can't get mad at it. My mom's great, too. All right, everybody, that was part one of the World on Drugs podcast with Nicole Amy Schreiber, all about Memo Fantasma and the Macacao. A little cartel action going on. Next episode will be out next week. Just want to tell everybody, thanks for listening. See you next week. I love my mom and dad. All right, bye.